Welcome to another episode of the Wine Scholar Guild podcast. I'm Valerie Caruso, a wine educator and podcast host, and with me is Maurizio Brocci. He is a DWS, a French wine scholar, and the education director for the Italian Wine Scholar program. Welcome, Maurizio.
Thank you, Valerie. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited we get to chat today. We've been trying to set this up for a while.
Yeah.
And over the summer, you had a group of wine educators, and you were essentially educating the educators in the northern part of Italy. So today, we really want to hear about the regions you visited and how important those tours are for educating the educators.
Sure. It was in early June. That was the first Wine Scholar Guild educator trip in Italy. We went to visit Trentino, Franciacorta, and Lugano for 8 days. And the trip was organized with the help and the support of the three consorti of Trentino, Franciacorta, and Lugano. And they honestly did an amazing job at any level. Everything was super well organized. We were really, really happy. And it was really an outstanding experience for all of us. And I think that this kind of educator trip for the Wine Scholar Guild are extremely important because we want to create a connection between the educators and the wine regions and the appellations. And it is important for the educators to visit the territory to see the vineyards, how the grapes grow, how the wineries operate, and to speak directly with the producer and the winemakers. In this particular case, we selected 15 of our educators from around the world who are currently teaching the Italian Wine Scholar certification. So we had educators from US, from Canada, from UK, from Asia like China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and we even had an educator from New Zealand. So it was quite interesting to have this heterogeneous group of people, of educators. And I think that this kind of educator trip works both ways, actually, because it is also important for the consortium and the producer to have this kind of direct contact with the educator and to kind of influence the way they're going to teach Italian wine. This is especially important, I think, for lesser known appellation like Trentino and Lugano, for example.
So let's start in Trentino because, and I'm thinking perhaps some bubbly. Trento Doc is one of my favorites. And then We'll move on to the red and white production regions and the styles and the major grapes. What of any notable historical significance is always a fun little known fact about Trentino?
Our journey started, our educator trip started with Trentino. We spent 3 days there. And on the first day, the consorzio organized an incredible walk around tasting with more than 40 different wines from different areas of Trentino, different grapes, different styles, including sparkling wine from Trento Doc. And in this way, our educator were able to really have an overview of the main style produced and the main grape varieties grown in Trentino. And this was important because it shows right away from the very first moment what Trentino can do in terms of wine. And I think that Trentino personally is one of the most underrated and lesser known wine regions of Italy. But as our educator saw during our visit, Trentino is not only a really wonderful place because as you arrive, you see vineyards everywhere, all trained with the traditional pergola. So it's really a beautiful place. But Trentino is also able to really produce distinctive and high quality wine. And this is for several reasons. The first one probably is the advantage of being at high altitude. They have vineyards that lie even over 2,000, 3,000 feet above sea level. They have the influence of the Lake Garda from the southern part of the region. They have talented producers who really care about their land and unique grapes, like, for example, the red Teroldego or the white Nosiola. You mentioned Trento Doc, and in fact, I think that Trentino has a really an asset, and this is Trento Doc. Trento Doc is the specific appellation, the specific DOC for the production of traditional method sparkling wines. And although they are still not very well known outside Italy, they have one of the oldest traditions for the production of bottle fermented sparkling wine that goes back to the beginning of the 20th century with Giulio Ferrari. Giulio Ferrari was the first to produce traditional method sparkling wines in Trentino from Chardonnay and was also the founder of Ferrari. Ferrari is the largest and most famous producer of sparkling wine in Trentino, and I think that many people today know Ferrari, but they don't associate necessarily with Trento Doc and with Trentino. In fact, all the wines produced by Ferrari are from Trentino, from Trento Doc. Speaking briefly about the wines of Trento Doc, they are based on Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. They are mostly Chardonnay based. And I think that Trento Doc, the sparkling wine of Trento Doc, could really be the key in terms of recognition for the whole region. Trento DOC has all the elements to become one of the most important sparkling wines of Italy, even internationally. And we can see that in the quality of the wine that are rising every year. We can see that from the recognition from the press, from wine critics like Tom Stevenson, for example. And I think that the rise of the Trento DOC sparkling wine of Trentino can really work as a kind of driving force for the whole region. So people probably would start to associate that this sparkling wine comes from Trentino, and so I'll give more visibility also to the rest of the wines that are produced here, because there is not only Trento DOC, of course, there are very unique grapes and appellation. The first one that comes to mind and that we visited was Terol de Orotagliano DOC. This is an appellation that is based on the red grape Teroldico that is called the Prince of Trentino, the Principe del Trentino. And this red grape is able to produce complex, full body red wine with aging potential. And they are grown in a specific area of Trentino known as Piana Rotagliana, that is located on the northern part of Trentino, almost at the border with Alto Adige, on a very characteristic gravelly soil. But there are other wines, other grapes, like for example the white Nosiola that we mentioned before. Nosiola is indigenous of Trentino, but it mainly found in the southern part of Trentino, and it used to produce crisp white wine, but also one of the specialties of Trentino, that is Vino Santo. This is different than Vin Santo from Tuscany. There is a final O after Vin, so it's spelled Vino Santo. And this is a sweet passito wine made entirely from Nosiola grape that are air-dried through a passimento and aged for several years in wood. This is a really complex, intense, and long-lived passito wine. And of course, when we talk about Trentino, we also have to mention international grapes, because there are a lot of international grapes that are grown in Trentino. But the one that I'd like to mention today, and then we also had the opportunity to taste during the visit, was Müller-Thurgau. Usually when you talked about Müller-Thurgau, this is not a grape that is associated with high quality wine or very expressive or inspiring wines. But in Trentino, Müller-Thurgau has found a specific place that is called Valle di Cembra, Cembra Valley. This is a high altitude location where the Müller-Thurgau is planted on terrace vineyards at altitude over 2,000, 3,000 feet above sea level on unique volcanic porphyritic rocks. And in this area, Müller-Thurgau is really able to express a particular aromatic complexity that is unusual for this grape. And we tasted several Müller-Thurgau from Trentino, from Val di Cembra, and the wine were really, really amazing.
On to Franciacorta then. We have the major differences in styles as far as the sparkling wines from Trentino and then Franciacorta, which is all about the sparkling wines. And there's something different that I remember tasting at Vinitaly quite a few years ago, the Sauternes.
Sure. The Sauternes is a very specific category for Franciacorta. It is made only from white grape, Chardonnay and Pinot Blanc, but mostly Chardonnay, so it is a Blanc de Blanc. And it is only made in a brut style and must be aged for a minimum of 24 months on the list. But what is really characteristic of the Sauternes category is that the pressure of the wine must not exceed the 5 atmospheres. So usually the sparkling wines, Franciacorta or other sparkling wine, are around 6 atmospheres. But for Sauternes, the wine must not exceed 5 atmospheres, so you have less pressure, and this makes the wine softer with a silkier and creamier mousse.
Okay, so it's not quite a frizzante, it's still a spumante.
Yeah, still a spumante, but you can really feel the creamier mousse. It's quite an interesting category of Franciacorta, for sure.
Let's go back to, because you gave us the history of the Trento DOC, so let's go into the history of Franciacorta and Franco Aziliani's role in it.
Sure. Franciacorta is probably today the most, let's say, the top traditional made of sparkling wine appellation of Italy. But if we look at the history of Franciacorta, it's relatively recent, because we started in 1950. And thanks to the pioneer work of the enology Franco Zigliani at the Berlucchi Winery. And Franco Zigliani created the first traditional method sparkling wine in Franciacorta in 1961. And it was called at the time Pinot di Franciacorta, because it was mainly based on Pinot Bianco. And during our visit, we were actually very lucky, because Berlucchi was one of the wineries that we visited on the first day. And we were welcomed by Cristina Zigliani, who is the daughter of Franco Zigliani. We had an amazing lunch at the Berlucchi Medieval Palace. We visited the winery, the outstanding underground cellars. And right at the end of the visit, when we were basically leaving the building, we met Franco Zigliani. This was totally unexpected because, I mean, it's not easy to meet Franco Zigliani because he's almost 90 years old, so you don't see it very often. It was a real treat because it was an honor for me, for everybody. And it was really nice because he wanted to shake hands, to take picture, to understand who we were. It was really one of the highlights of the trip, for sure.
So to wine people, that's a big deal for us, to meet these legends.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that for us, I mean, for me in particular, but I think that also all the educators who already studied the history of Franciacorta and the wines really understood it was a really special moment, because Franco Zigliani is, we can say that literally is the father of Franciacorta, the man who invented Franciacorta. So to be able to meet the guy was really something unique.
Well, before we get into the other styles, we mentioned the Sauternes already and the grapes, etc. Can you tell us a little bit about where Franciacorta got its name?
Franciacorta, there are various theory. The one that is considered the true one, the most credible, is that Franciacorta comes from Franche Curtes, or Curtes Franche from Latin. It means basically a territory where there is no tax, free from taxation. And this is refers to a period in the medieval age when there was no, in that particular area, there was no tax for the people who was passing through the area.
Okay.
Yeah, this is interesting.
And then, of course, the grapes are a little bit different. A lot of people will call Franciacorta the champagne of Italy, and there are a lot of Italian wine writers that don't like that. Tell us what the main differences are.
Well, let's say that the main grapes used in the Franciacorta blend are Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Pinot Blanc. But mostly, let's say that the Chardonnay is the predominant grape variety. But since 2017, there has been a new addition, and this is a recent development. The Disciplinare has been modified to introduce the grape called Erbamat. Erbamat is a local grape indigenous of the province of Brescia. Is a very ancient grape, and there was a study that had been conducted for 10 years, and the reason why the consortium decided to focus on this grape is that Erbamat is a very late ripening grape, very high in acidity, and so in the long term, considering the effect of the climate change, the consortium is thinking ahead, and then they're thinking to introduce this grape, Erbamat, to provide acidity, so also it's late ripening. And for the moment, the grape can only be used up to 10%, but we see in the future, depending on how the wine will be, how the grape will affect also the wine aging.
Did you taste any wines made with the Erbamat, or can you name any producers that are using it?
Sure, there's one of them is Barone Pizzini. We had not the opportunity to taste because right now this is a really recent introduction. It was officialized in 2017, and there are right now just a handful of producers who are growing Erbamat and are using Erbamat. But I know that there are more producers who have planted Erbamat, so we just need to wait a few years before the grape can be used in the blend. But we probably will see more Erbamat in the future. But unfortunately, we didn't have the opportunity to taste wine with Erbamat yet.
Now, what I'm going to do is, you mentioned Barone Pizzini, and I do remember Verdicchio from way further down south than where we're going, but this kind of brings us to our next region, because we're going to talk a little bit about Turbiano and Verdicchio in the next section. So we're going to go to Lugana. We want to talk about where it is and the different styles of Lugana wines made with the Turbiano grape, and how these wines differ from the Verdicchio styles and the other regions that listeners may be more familiar with. So talk to us about where it is and the wines of Lugana.
The Lugana was the third and last stop of our educator trip. And Lugana is an white wine appellation located on the southern side of Lake Garda and on the beautiful southern shore of Lake Garda. This is really beautiful place, lots of tourists from Italy, from Northern Europe. It's really beautiful. Lugana is lucky because they grow this grape that is called Turbiana, and they make white wine from this Turbiana grape. In my opinion, the Lugana wines are some of the most distinctive white wines of Italy. They have high acidity, they have body, they have complexity, and real aging potential. And we were lucky, myself and the educator, because we were able to taste more than 20 different producers at a walk-around tasting organized by the Consortia for Lugana. And this was a great opportunity to taste many producers together, to see different style, different area. And we were also lucky enough to be able to taste old vintages like 2005, 2003, and also 1999. And we could really see the aging potential of this particular grape, especially in the Superiore and the Riserva version. When you talk about Turbiana, first of all, Turbiana is the official name that the Consortio and all the producers have adopted in recent years. Before, Turbiana was mainly known by the name of Trebbiano di Lugana, and they decided to adopt Turbiana, which is an ancient synonym of the grape, of this grape, because to avoid any association with the Trebbiano Toscano, which is not a high quality grape. Instead, Turbiana, it is a high quality grape. So to avoid any confusion, they prefer to officially adopt the name Turbiana. And when we talk about Lugana and we talk about Turbiana, it is inevitable to talk about Verdicchio, because according to many experts, the two grapes are genetically identical. And to be precise, Turbiana Verdicchio, but also Trebbiano di Soave, that is a grape grown in the Soave area that can be used in a small proportion to produce the Soave wines together with Garganega. The grapes are all genetically identical. Historically, however, the wines produced from Verdicchio and from Turbiana were different, tasted different, and morphologically the vines and the grape bunches were different. And this was explained by saying that the Turbiana was a biotype of Verdicchio that adapted differently to a completely different territory compared to the Castelli di Jesi in Verdicchio. So different soil, different climatic conditions. Let's just think about the presence of Lake Garda and the typical clay soil that there are in Lugana. So the general idea was that Turbiana was a biotype of Verdicchio. However, there is a more recent study that has been conducted at the University of Milan that showed that, in fact, Verdicchio is not genetically identical to Turbiana. They are related, they are closely genetically similar, but they are not the same. The same study confirmed that Verdicchio and Trebbiano di Soave are the same grape, but in the end, the main conclusion, most important conclusion of this study was that Turbiana is not 100% genetically identical to Verdicchio. And I think the Consortio and all the producers are very happy about this because, you know, when you go there and there are people who are asking, but is Turbiana the same as Verdicchio? So they have to explain that was different. And this study somehow showed that they were right, that the grape is in fact different than Verdicchio.
And to be clear, there are different styles of the Lugana wine. You mentioned the Superiore and the Riserva and the still wines, but we didn't mention the sparkling, the Spumante, and then the dessert styles.
Yeah, there are, you're correct, there are five styles in total for Lugana. Let's say that the main one is the Lugana DOC, which is the entry level that accounts for 80-90% of the total production. This is the younger, lighter style that to be consumed young and fresh. Then you have the Superiore and the Riserva, and these are the fuller body, more complex, with great aging potential. And then you have, as you mentioned, also a Spumante version that can be done either in traditional method or the Charmat Martinotti method, and also a late harvest Vendemmia Tardiva example. But both these two categories are produced in tiny quantities, of course.
And of course, you read my mind, so I don't have to ask any more questions because you answered them all. So that was fantastic. Is there anything else you want to add about the trip, about any of the regions, or about any upcoming trips that you might be doing?
No, I think we covered pretty much all the main aspects of this really wonderful trip. I think that I'm sure that all the educators were really happy because they tasted a lot of wine. We had wonderful food, and the people, the Consortia, were really amazing. They organized everything. Every single minute we could spend it with the producer tasting wine to visit the territory. It was really a truly amazing experience.
Well, I chatted with two people in Rochester last week who were on the tour with you, and they had an amazing time. They could not stop talking about it. So,
I'm happy
to hear that. Yeah. They were very, very happy with the tour. But I do have one more question for you, Maurizio. If you were a wine, which wine would you be and why?
You know what? We talk about Lugana. I'm just thinking right now that I think it would be a Lugana because, as I was saying, there is this basic entry-level version, which is can be consumed when young and fresh, but you can also with the Lugana Superiore, the Lugana Riserva, for many, many years and still have an outstanding wine. So I would probably think I would be, I'd like to be a Lugana wine.
Okay, get better with age. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you so much, Maurizio. And listeners, you can find out more about the Italian Wine Scholar program, any future immersion trips, and more on the website at wineschollarguild.org.